Take from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And because SNL is not on this week, yeah, we're doing another one of our theme shows.
Yeah!
And this week we decided to do our favorite musical performances.
That's right.
Over the years.
Yeah, I mean, on this podcast we get very musical. We break out in the song quite a bit.
More than we should.
More than asked of us.
Yes.
So we're like, hey, we like music, so let's do a SNL music episode.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of music, so here, you know, just so the listeners know a little bit about us and where we're coming from, our viewpoint. Mr. Trumbull, do you remember the first album you ever bought and the first concert you ever been to?
I don't remember the first album I ever bought with my own money, but the first rock album I was like really conscious of.
Well,
as
just
a
any
kid.
Album, rock or you know.
Yeah,
whatever,
it was Billy Joel's Glass Houses.
Ooh, wow!
So that's the one where he's standing in front of a literal glass house and he's got a big rock.
Yeah,
he's gonna throw it.
He's just a badass. He's super rock and roll.
Well, I mean, when you're like 10, that seems like really super rebellious.
That is true. Yeah.
So
it's
mean,
like, whoa,
Billy Joel fit the rebelliousness of a repressed 10-year-old white boy.
Yeah, it's so like, whoa, he don't give a fuck.
He hit me where I lived.
Wait, so what's on that album? That's You May Be Right?
You May Be Right, I believe, is the first song on the album.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off.
You sprung this on me, and I didn't have the track list at the ready.
No, I thought you just knew off the rip.
Well, no.
Okay, all right. I thought it was like your favorite album.
I didn't say that. I said it was the first album I was conscious of.
Okay. All right. I'll look it up. Hey, what about your first concert?
My first concert, that was a good one. This was in like 1988, 89. I saw R.E.M.
Whoa.
On the Green Tour, and opening for them was a little unknown band called the Indigo Girls.
Whoa.
Who it was like just before the Indigo Girls broke.
Oh, nice.
Nationally. So,
far out.
That was fun. We were like, hey, I think the first Indigo Girls songs I ever heard were like on the way to that concert. We're like, do you know these Indigo Girls people? And we checked out some of their songs.
Okay, that's pretty neat. Like, it's always cool when you see like a band, like before they become big, they like, you know, you see them open for something. Like, I remember seeing, like, this was years ago, because like I'm huge hip hop head, because, you know, I'm ill and dope and from the streets.
Sure.
And I saw Outkast like years ago, like in like maybe 97, 98. It was when their third album came out, Aquemini. And I saw it was in New York City, and opening for them was this little band that just came out with their first album called the Black Eyed Peas.
Ooh.
And this was like pre-Fergie, so it was like three of them. And
did you get it started?
I did not get it started.
Okay. I have the Billy Joel track list up if you're still curious.
Yeah. Let's go.
This is actually like the first side of this. It's a great, great rock and roll album there. We got You May Be Right, Sometimes a Fantasy, which I always loved. Don't Ask Me Why.
Ooh.
It's Still Rock and Roll to Me. That was another hit single. All for Lena.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we got the deep cuts on what I'm assuming is the second side. I Don't Want to Be Alone, Sleeping with the Television On. Set a Toi, You Were the One, which Billy Joel himself has said is one of the worst songs he ever wrote.
Wow.
because he was trying to write a song in French, and he does not speak French.
Why did he do that?
I think he was feeling pretentious that day.
oh, boy. Billy's never going to listen to this podcast.
We got Close to the Borderline and Through the Long Night. So some of the more obscure songs on the second side. But that first, first five or so songs,
that is
a solid album side there.
Don't Ask Me Why, it's a solid hit.
Yeah.
I
like It's Still Rock and Roll to Me. For Lane is a good song. Sometimes a Fantasy was probably my favorite on that album. So,
Far out, sir. Okay. And so the first album, I bought two albums at the same time though, my first ones.
Okay.
It was like a 1990, I believe. So I was in junior high. I bought, because I listened to a lot of Top 100 at the time. And,
sure.
You know, 1990, around that time, it was all like dance and techno music was like really big. So, first album I bought was the first CNC Music Factory album, Gonna Make You Sweat.
Yeah.
And that also came out around the same time I bought this other album called The Simpsons Sing the Blues. So, I'm pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
I did the Bartman. I was in deep, deep trouble. Yeah.
Can you name any other song off that album?
No.
Okay.
Well, no, there was, I remember Homer did a cover of Born Under a Bad Sign on that album, and I think that's it. That's all I remember.
Wow.
I mean, I mainly brought it just on the strength of Do the Bartman, just because that
sure
Bartman thing was like all the rage. Mm-hmm. And like, that's back at the time when everybody had a Bart Simpson t-shirt.
Yeah.
It was like...
Yeah, they were really, really huge in the first season or two of that show.
It was pretty bonkers.
And what was your first concert?
First concert. This happened in 97. I was in college. Again, I went to college right in the city. I went to Queens College. So in the city, there's this venue. It's not around anymore that I really liked. It's called Tramps. It was, like 21st Street between like 5th and 6th, something like that. Like in, you know, like a Chelsea area. Mm-hmm. So, at concert I went to, Wyclef Jean.
Wow.
Yeah, and this was when his first solo album came out, The Carnival.
Okay.
That's when it had that Stayin' Alive song, or whatever the song he sampled, Stayin' Alive, too. And it was a great concert. I really dug it. And it was an interesting story, too, because like, the way the venue was shaped was, like, it was like a kind of like a small, you know, kind of sweaty venue, and the stage was on one side of the place, and the bar was like way in the back. So like me and my friends were kind of packed in the back, and everybody was kind of packed in looking at the concert. And then I was kind of looking around, and I turned around, and literally like maybe 2 feet standing right behind me was Chris Rock. He was standing right behind me, and I was like, oh shit. And it was like Chris Rock at the height. It was like, you know.
Yeah. This is like Bring the Pain.
Bring the Pain. And like, I asked him to sign a flyer of, because like I had like a Wyclef Jean flyer that they were just handing out. I was like, oh, uh-huh, can you sign this flyer for me? Because it's back when people asked for autographs and not selfies.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, sure. And he signed a flyer for me.
So was he nice?
Yeah, he was super nice. I didn't bug him. I don't like bugging celebrities. I'm not like, mm-hmm, one of those people who was like, yo, I need to, you know, take a picture with me. I need a selfie, fam. Or whatever people say. Like, I just, you know, say hello, I enjoy your work, and then I just walk away. I don't, mm-hmm, I don't want to feel like I'm intruding when it comes to celebs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I got a signature, I just turned around, said thank you, and enjoyed the rest of the concert.
That is very cool. Do you still have that?
I do. It's around somewhere. But I showed my friends it, and they were like, because it was dark, it looks like a signature, but you can't really tell. But so, uh-huh, I showed it to all my friends, and I'm like, I don't know, this don't look like Chris Rock's signature.
And you don't have a selfie to prove it.
Yeah, God, before a selfie, they had a stupid StarTAC. That's all I had.
But still, that's a cool first concert experience.
Yeah. Wyclef Jean.
That's cool.
All right. So yeah, let's get back to SNL and talk about the musical performances that shaped and changed our lives.
Did you have like a particular criteria going into this? Did you have how did you compile your list?
Going into this, I basically kind of picked out some concerts. I picked out some performances that I really enjoyed that kind of spoke to me, and then, mm-hmm, I also wrote down some very historic ones. Like, I mean, there's, mm-hmm, there's a couple here that, like, you have to talk about when you talk about musical performances on SNL, because like immediately it comes to mind. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about this. So that's kind of how I approached it.
Okay.
And what about yourself?
Much the same.
Far out.
Much the same. All right.
All right. So hey, let's go. I'll start it off. I'll go with one of my favorite performances, one of my personal favorites, and it happened just recently. I'm gonna go with when A Tribe Called Quest performed on SNL with a Dave Chappelle.
Oh, okay.
You remember that? Yeah. Because
I don't remember that musical number, but I actually rewatched the Dave Chappelle monologue.
Oh, yeah.
From that show.
Speaks volumes.
Yes.
I mean, for those that don't know, this the Dave Chappelle episode when he hosted with musical guest A Tribe Called Quest, it was the first episode right after the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that had the infamous cold open with Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton just playing a piano somberly, singing Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley. It's a very divisive, cold open for some people. And it was like one of those times where we were all just like, wow, this really happened.
We were all shell-shocked.
Very much so. Like, if I think about it too long, I'll have like Vietnam flashbacks of that day.
PTSD.
Like, yeah, very much. I was like, wow, this is really happening. This is where the country's going. This is all right. And I can't speak for everybody, but for myself, like when that election happened, I was just really in a bummed out, dark place. I was like, mm-hmm, like, my God, this is God, what the?
But everything's okay now.
Yeah. Oh no. Everything's gym.
Yeah. Everything's going swimmingly.
Everything's gym dandy.
That's right.
but one of the things
gym
that helped
pro dandy.
Oh Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. It was
No. It was there. You took it. I can't.
But Tribe Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest. So So one of the things that really helped me get out of those doldrums was the new Tribe album that came out days after the election.
Uh huh.
I don't know, because I'm a huge Tribe Called Quest fan. Like, they're one of my favorite groups probably of all time. Like, them and De La Soul. You know, I'm big in the hip-hop, especially 90s hip-hop, and Tribe was just my group. It was just, because they're from Queens, I'm from Queens. They actually grew up at, like, the town over from where I grew up. So I was like, that's my group. So when I found out that they were coming out with a new album, I was very excited, but wary too, because like their last few albums were like so-so. So when the new album came out and I listened to it, it was like way better than I thought it'd be. It was amazing. And the fact that one of their original members, Fife Dawg, passed away really hit me hard. So when Tribe Called Quest came out and they did the first song called We the People, which is, if you listen, it's a very angry song about, you know, the state of the world today, which is weird because Tribe Called Quest isn't known for being angry. If you listen to a lot of their stuff, it's very kind of happy-go-lucky, but also sometimes it gets kind of serious and melancholy. But it's never been angry. It's never been like almost militant, like Chuck D type anger.
Uh-huh.
So when they came out with this angry song, We the People, like really hit, especially, you know, right after the election. It was all like culminating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great song. Guys, listen to it. Download it if you can. And then there's this one part in the performance in the song where Fife Dawg is rapping, and it's stuff he did before he passed away, of course. And when that happened, they dropped this huge banner of, you know, with a picture of Fife Dawg on it, like when his verses were going. And I don't know, just something about that and the fact that my favorite band of all time, with one of my favorite comedians hosting of all time, and this album that really hit and this election that just happened, like all of that kind of culminated and just kind of hit me in a weird way. And I was like,
right.
It got me very emotional. I was like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I don't know. I loved it. I think this just one of my top performances. Happened in November of 2016.
Yeah, hit you in the right place at the right time.
Hit me in the right place. I was just like, God, this is... Ooh, gave me chills.
Mm.
Chills, Trumbull!
Okay.
All right, so I'll leave it up to you.
That's what's a good choice.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I'll say number five choice. This was something... We threw this out to our Twitter followers to ask them to suggest some things.
Right.
And at SNL Nerd Show on Twitter. Please follow us. We just broke 100 followers. We're up to like 109, 110 followers now. So, woo, go us.
Yeah.
One of the first responses we got was from, who was it again? You were telling me before we were on the air.
Ruby the Rube?
I think so. This is, they suggested Beck Clap Hands.
Yes, Ruby the Rube. Ruby_the_Rube. Hey, Ruby.
So thank you, Ruby. And as soon as they suggested that, I was like, oh, yeah, I totally remember that. But I probably wouldn't have remembered that if they hadn't suggested it.
Yeah, it came out in 2006.
Yes, that was October 28th, 2006, season 32, host Hugh Laurie.
Wow.
So, big on that House fame, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, House was huge for a while.
That's right. We loved the House.
Oh, House.
We loved the House. He was like, he treats people and he insults them. Oh. What?
Burning down the House.
But this was a really incredible performance by Beck. It was Beck's in like a tux. He's got the longish hair,
right.
And he's singing the song. And his band is just doing they're set up at a table and they've got like a a turkey and all that.
Yeah.
And they're doing like a stomp sort of thing.
Yeah,
they're playing it on the glasses and on the silverware and stuff. And
I thought that was really interesting. Like they're Beck is the only one that has an instrument. Everybody else is just kind of playing the plates and the glasses of water.
Uh-huh.
And it works too.
Yeah, yeah. And then they periodically cut to like a puppet Beck and his puppet band, and it's set up the exact same way, dressed the exact same way, and it was really striking. And it was and it's a cool song too.
Yeah, it's a really cool song. And then there's one point where he kind of breaks out into like a harmonica solo too.
Uh-huh.
Like I really liked that performance, and I mean I was also a huge fan of Beck too. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, not his. I mean, I've listened to his later stuff. It kind of, I don't know. Like his last album that came out. Have you heard? Are you a Beck fan? Maybe
I'm like a moderate Beck fan. I've kind of dropped off a Beck, so I haven't heard much of what he's done in, say, the last decade or so.
Yeah, I heard his last album, Colors. It was like, it's like very kind of mainstream and like all the songs sound like they belong in like commercials for Target.
Okay.
A little bit. But like if you listen to early Beck, like, you know, yeah. Mellow Gold, Odelay.
Yeah.
Even like Mutations and
El Guero is El Guero. I think the last album of his I was really into. Yeah.
El Guero was good. Midnight Vultures I liked a lot.
I have Midnight Vultures.
Midnight Vultures is really good. Yeah. Sea Change. Like he's just like so oddball and weird, and it mm-hmm. just kind of worked. So to see him sort of bring his oddballness into this SNL performance, it was like incredible. Like,
yeah,
it's not. I think it's hard to find a little bit this performance online, but it is out there.
It's out there. I did some deep diving and I Ooh. Found it. I found a.
Oh, you got friends in high places.
I found like I think one of the versions I watched was where they do the video like and they rotate it diagonally.
Oh,
and it's sort of like in a diamond pattern, I yeah. guess, because that way the automatic algorithms can't pick up on it.
You know what? I can talk about that. There's one performance I was going to talk yeah. about that had that exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Another one I'm going to talk about has that exact same thing.
Wait, which one is it? Maybe is it the same one?
Well, probably, but we'll get to that.
Okay, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Let's not spoil it too early.
Okay, yeah, just don't tease. Got to tease easy.
But it was a great performance, and it takes a lot to really do a performance that really stands out
right.
on SNL, I think, because it can get kind of formulaic.
Yeah, very much so. But that really stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of one that stands out, one of my personal favorites, another one, mm-hmm. happened in May of 2005. Another one of my favorite bands, Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh, yeah, nice.
With their performance, I believe they had it. They were on when Will Ferrell hosted.
I know what you're going to go. Remember? Yeah.
So anyway, so they did one of their songs, Little Sister. I think it was on the Lullabies to Paralyze album, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going off the top of my head. And it's a great song. But in that song, they have, there's a cowbell that goes on throughout it. And so when they're on, they're playing and performing, they have a cowbell in that song.
I see where this is going.
You see where this is going.
A cowbell, Will Ferrell.
Yes. And Will Ferrell walks up on stage during the cowbell song, dressed at the cowbell part, dressed mm-hmm. as the guy
Gene Frankel
from the Blue Oyster Cult, and I remember watching that with a bunch of my friends, and we were yeah. like, "Yo, that's so cool!"
And this is like years after he did, because they yeah. did that cowbell sketch like sometime in the '90s, I think.
Right, that's like back when Fallon and Kattan and mm-hmm. and Chris yeah. Parnell were in the show. So the fact that he did this character that they hadn't done in years, but people mm-hmm. just immediately got it was.
Yeah.
Like, great. The band didn't mention him.
It was never commented on. He just comes on, he's playing cowbell, and at the end, they're just, he and the lead singer are just standing there side by side.
Right.
And it was great.
Like, if you got it, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they didn't explain it, and that was just a beautiful thing. And just to see that was, like, that was a performance.
That was a really fun one.
That's
a good choice.
Hit me in the heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, so what else you got?
My next choice, this is one that I actually saw repeated on the 10 o'clock rerun earlier this season. You remember earlier this season, Paul Simon came on the show.
Oh, again,
and for the 10 p.m. rerun, they showed this show from November of 1976, so season two of the show, and it was Paul Simon who was hosting,
right?
And he also did a musical segment with a Mr. George Harrison sitting in with him.
Never heard of him.
And
is he a new guy?
This was, of course, shortly after Lorne Michaels made the famous or infamous offer of the Beatles to reunite for 3,000.
I was thinking if we should talk about that or not, because like it was like it's SNL related, but it didn't really happen.
Yeah,
in the
opening of the show, you see George Harrison talking to Lorne Michaels backstage, and Lorne Michaels is explaining, no, you don't understand. Since it was like 3,000 for all four of you, I thought you understood that it'd just be 750 for one of you. And then George Harrison, who's just so wonderfully deadpan, just goes, well, I don't know. It's pretty chintzy. And, he's just a Beatle saying chintzy. It's great. But George Harrison and Paul Simon, they did two songs together, like a medley. They did George's song, Here Comes the Sun, and then they did the Simon and Garfunkel song, Homeward Bound.
Wow, and I don't think I saw that.
Gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. I mean, look this up if you have not seen it. It's worth seeing. I mean, and their voices blend together just so beautifully.
Wow.
I read they didn't actually do this song live. It was actually like pre-taped.
Okay.
So they were playing it to an empty studio, I think. So I guess they just played the video for the live show. But it's an amazing number. And just, I mean,
wow.
it's two, the all-time great musicians at the top of their game. So
I had no idea. Wow. Yeah. I'm flummoxed.
Worth checking out.
I'm flabbergasted.
Worth checking out.
I wish I'd known about that. Shit. All right. Well, I got to look up. I mean, I was going to mention like another Paul Simon, because Paul Simon, mm-hmm. you know, musical hosted yes. many a time. And I was going to mention the one time when he was there promoting Graceland. And he was with the
Ladysmith Black
Mambazo. And they did Diamonds on the Shores of Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes.
That like just missed my list. I strongly consider putting that on.
It's a great show. And like, you know, the guys in the back are just doing like synchronized dancing. It was like very
sharp. They kind of like just float around. I mean, it wasn't
like
it wasn't
circle.
Quite a conga line, but it was like equivalent, whatever the Ladysmith Black Mambazo equivalent of
it's
that
like a,
is.
Like a half circle. Yeah. Like, surrounded by Paul Simon. But it was really good.
Yeah.
And
it's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, also, like, Graceland's one of my favorite albums, too.
That's one of Paul Simon's all-time greats.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think my mom got me into it because my mom, like, always played it around because she really loved the album. And, like, through that, I was like, oh, this is a really good album.
Yeah.
So,
you know, there's another, like, great notable Paul Simon moment, which was like right after 9/11,
they had
Rudy Giuliani and the police commissioner and the fire department, all the first responders from 9/11. This was their first show back after, and it just opened up on a silent stage with them, and then they went to Paul Simon, who played the boxer.
That was
really famous. That was.
I remember that.
I felt like we should just at least mention that.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
It's very notable.
Or else we're un-American.
Yes.
Why do you hate our freedoms, SNL nerds?
But let's see. What's next? Am I up again, or is it you? You were going first, right?
No, you just said.
I just said somebody. Yeah, yeah. So right. You go now.
All right, so this is another one of my faves. 2014, Chris Rock hosted musical guest Prince. Who did an 8-minute set.
I've heard of him.
You've heard of him?
I have heard of him.
Yeah, give him a Google, guys, if you haven't.
He did like a big medley.
Yeah, he did an 8-minute set. Like, he basically, because like usually on SNL, it's like the musical guest does do like a two 4-minute sets.
Mm-hmm.
He just did mash them together in just one big 8-minute set.
Right.
And then, it was like a medley of a bunch of different songs, and he was like shredding on guitar. Mm-hmm. And like, it was really fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was also one of the performances I found on like YouTube, but it's like inverted, so they like you said, so they can't read the code.
Yeah,
but yeah, like I mean, I don't think he did any of his big hits on it, from what I remember seeing, but he did enough that like just basically blew the roof off the place. And I thought that was like the longest performance any musical guest has ever done on SNL. But then I looked it up a little further, and I found that somebody done a longer set.
Oh, who was that?
Back in 1978. A little group called the Rolling Stones.
I have heard of them.
They did a 13-minute set.
Damn!
Three songs in full. Beast of Burden, Shattered, and Respectable.
Wow. So this was like right around the time Some Girls came out, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I think they were promoting Some Girls, and they did. Apparently, they just let them do three songs back to back.
Well, they're the Rolling Stones, man. That's you let true. Them do what the F they want.
Just get out the way and let Keith be Keith.
You know, it's funny that you brought up the Rolling Stones.
What?
Because my next choice...
What? We didn't even plan this, guys.
...was when Mick Jagger hosted in 2012. It was May 19th, 2012. Season finale of season 37. Just so happened it was Kristen Wiig's last show.
Yeah. Oh, you got to talk about that?
Yeah. Okay. And, and it was Mick Jagger and the Foo Fighters, and they did a medley... and Arcade Fire was also there.
Oh, okay.
Mick did like a number with Arcade Fire, I think, earlier. But then later he does, he's playing with the Foo Fighters, and they do 19th Nervous Breakdown, and It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It.
Oh, yes,
and
I do.
I watched that. That was, I think, about like a 6-minute set.
Oh, really?
Altogether. And it's, I mean, and because it's the Foo Fighters, it's like a, you know, harder than the usual Stones sound.
Right.
I mean, they just... shredded.
They do. I'm big into the Foo. I was a huge Foo Fighters fan for a while.
Yeah.
Foo Fighters fan.
I mean, the Foo Fighters they're always solid. I always enjoy them. And you know, it's Dave Grohl singing along with Mick Jagger. I mean, you can't do much better than that.
No.
And I read about this, and because it was like Kristen Wiig's last show, they did a thing.
Yeah, that She's a Rainbow.
At the end of they did a medley of She's a Rainbow and Ruby Tuesday.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of, I mean, they don't do that normally.
It was a big extravagant goodbye. I mean, Kristen Wiig was apparently just beloved on that show.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a huge, huge performer on that show.
Yeah, no,
she was
absolutely.
Like dominating the show her last few seasons.
Absolutely.
To the point where it got a little annoying, quite frankly.
Wow.
Not untalented, but you know, she was dominating that show.
She was, yeah, she was.
And they did like a sort of a high school graduation thing. Everybody's in the graduation caps and gowns.
I remember seeing, and like everybody kind of took their turn to dance with her while Mick Jagger sang "She's Her." It looked like, and when I remember when Jason went up there, Sudeikis, it looked like he was about to cry for a minute.
He looked either like very sad or very pissed off, and I'm still not sure which one it is.
Yeah,
whenever I look at that clip, I'm just like, what's going on with Jason Sudeikis? I don't know
what's going on.
Because I think it was actually might have been Sudeikis' last show. No, I guess he stayed on for another few seasons. But
it turned
out to be a couple other people's final show too, like Andy Samberg's last show, and Abby Elliott's last show.
See, I didn't even remember that. I just all
because
the
they made such a big deal about Kristen Wiig.
All the focus was on Wiig,
and I read about they had a cast after party because you know it's the end of the season. It's Kristen Wiig's and other people's last show, and I found footage from this. and okay, so it's Mick Jagger performing with the Foo Fighters, and they're in the center of Rockefeller Plaza, so they're right in front of that big statue of Prometheus.
Right.
The movie? No.
Oh.
No.
Is that a big DVD version of the movie Prometheus?
No.
All right, well.
They're in front of the big gold statue that's in the ice skating rink. And there was like, they have water like flowing behind them. So it's like visually, it's gorgeous.
Okay.
And they performed at the cast party afterwards as Chevy Metal, which is the name they performed under.
Okay.
And he performed. And Arcade Fire was also there. They performed Miss You.
You keep saying that. Arcade Fire was also there.
Yes. They performed Miss You. Amy Poehler sang Bad Reputation.
Whoa.
Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Leslie Knope.
And then Kristen Wiig sang I Love Rock and Roll with Jason Sudeikis and Andy Samberg on backup.
Huh.
So you need to like find this on YouTube or wherever you go. Like do a search for like Mick Jagger, Foo Fighters, SNL After Party.
Wow.
Find it. Amazing stuff.
That's fantastic.
And it's kind of adorable because Kristen Wiig, like, after the first verse of I Love Rock and Roll, she, like, forgets the lyrics and she just kind of...
Oh, come on, Kristen.
You remember your lines
on SNL all the time. You can't
she
remember
has
I love...
cue cards.
Well, then write them on your hand. This is...
I don't think she knew ahead of time she was going to do that. I think it was kind of an impulse
thing. I don't know about
thing.
That.
It was still great. It was still great.
All right. I'll allow it.
Let's not throw Kristen under the bus here.
She's had a hard go of it.
I mean, it was an emotional evening for her, I'm sure.
All right.
But it was an amazing performance.
Huh. All right. Well, I gotta look up this baby.
Yeah, it was something else, believe me.
All right. So here, let's go into some of the other parts, other musical performances, some of the stuff that was maybe a little bit more controversial.
Oh, are we doing some of the infamous ones now? All right, let's go.
Infamous.
Let's go.
See, all right, so when you were talking about finding videos and the screen being tilted, were you talking about this one, the Replacements?
I was not. I read about this, and I didn't watch this. I heard about this performance.
All right.
Why don't you tell us about it?
All right. So I don't know how you feel about the Replacements, if you're a fan or a casual fan. I kind of like that one album they came out, the Let It Be, where they're sitting on the roof. I dig that album.
That's like their most famous album.
Yeah, the big one. So this happened in January of 1986. Apparently, they were scheduled to play in SNL on SNL. And
As you do.
And they're also very infamous for being a very wild, crazy, hard-drinking band.
I have heard this about them, yes.
Yes. Numerous times people have said they've seen them in concert and they've just been obliterated and drunk and just a big old mess.
Wait, rock stars who abuse drugs and alcohol?
Apparently.
What?
Look, I'm just as shocked as you are. Apparently this happens. All right?
Okay.
I don't know. So apparently this is a story. They got drunk with the host of the show this evening, which was Harry Dean Stanton.
Sure.
They got crazy, crazy drunk, and they went on and played one of their big songs called Bastards of the Young.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it, and it's like really sloppy. apparently they turned up the volume a little bit louder without the staff knowing. So like if you hear it, it sounds like even louder and almost like you can make out what they're saying, but it sounds like
it's distorted.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like like crazy, and it took them a while. The staff took them a while to like find what they did, and I turned it down a little bit.
Right.
And one of the, I think the lead guitarist was like dressed in like a woman's like unitard or something, like a striped unitard.
Sure, as you do.
Yeah, and you know there were times where the singer was kind of singing, but then he just kind of walked away from the mic like that, and it was like they were missing cues. The guitarist was he wasn't like standing in the right spot that he should have, so he's kind of off.
So it's almost like abusing alcohol makes you give a sloppier performance.
I mean, who knew? Yeah, but like the guitarist, he was kind of standing off frame at some point, and he was coming back in frame. There was one point where the lead singer was shouted to the one of the other guys in the band. He said, "Come on, fucker!" But he did it off the mic. But mm-hmm. like people in the audience heard him say, "Fucker!"
Right, sure.
But yeah, because I mean, he was saying it like, "Come on, let's do this. Let's
Right.
Because they really wanted to give a huge performance. It's like memorable raw performance, mm-hmm. and it was raw.
Yeah,
but like in a sloppy, kind of unrehearsed way, but it was right. Some people liked that,
and they were banned from the show after that, weren't they?
They were banned from the show.
Were they like thrown out of the studio? I think I read.
No, I mean, well, they had to, because that was their first performance, so they had to stay around and do the second one. And
they let them do the second. Okay.
Yeah, and there was also one point where the lead guitarist, who was in a unitard, he kind of at the end of their song, they got through it. He kind of fell to the ground and did like a somersault or like a backflip.
Right,
and I guess the unitard rode up. So his bare ass showed to the audience, and they're like,
"All right." I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, it's like, "All right." He just showed his bare ass to the audience.
Sure,
can't record it.
Okay.
So I think after that, Lauren came and was like, "What the fuck? What happened?" Like I think he was banned after they were banned after that.
Sure.
And but they went on to do the second one. The second one went a little bit better.
How could it not?
Yeah. But I think what happened is like I think they got drunk and like three of the band members switched clothes. So like when you see them like. You see three of them were wearing the other person's clothes in the second performance.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So, yeah, so that's the replacement. Getting drunk with Harry Dean Stanton, showing bare ass. And
I'm very curious about this show now. I need to see this one.
It's out there if you find it. It's
wow.
It's really something.
Wow. That kind of reminds me, there was another like very infamous performance where they had the punk band Fear.
Yeah, play. Oh, I was going to talk about that too.
Yeah, where apparently John Belushi was a huge, huge punk fan.
Yeah, this happened is in October 1981.
So this was after the original cast has left the show.
Right.
And Belushi said, like, if you have this band on, I will do a cameo on the show, or I will be on the show in some fashion.
Right.
And
yeah.
They booked Fear against their better judgment.
Yeah, because like I think at that point they feel like they needed Belushi because he was like the old guard. Because
the show was struggling at this
point. Yeah,
exactly. It was like Lauren was gone, all the original cast, all the big stars were gone.
Right.
So they really needed a Belushi cameo to bring some eyeballs to the show.
They needed a win.
And I think they started out their set by saying it's great to be here in New Jersey.
Yeah, that got booed.
Which when you're broadcasting in the middle of New York, maybe not the best move.
Yeah.
And then they started a mosh pit.
They
brought in people to do a mosh pit.
There were slam dancers and the like.
And they basically started a riot in the middle of the studio.
There's footage of it out there too, and it is pandemonium, people. It is just like, whoa. And from what I've heard is like because it was Halloween, there were somebody brought in pumpkins and there were jack-o'-lanterns or something. And like people were like kind of throwing around pumpkins. And apparently there's a report that Dick Ebersol got hit in the chest with a jack-o'-lantern. I don't know if that's true. Like I read it somewhere.
Oh, I still want that to be true.
Yeah,
I mean, nothing against Dick Ebersol, but that just sounds so hilarious. You want that to be true.
That's a little thing called karma. And apparently they did a whole bunch of damage. You know, cameras were damaged and a piano, and there was like maybe like $20,000 worth of damage was done.
That's unreal.
Unreal. I mean, I've seen it, and it is like pure mayhem.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it because it's mayhem's hilarious.
It's very punk.
It's
very punk.
It's one of the most. There's a couple of punk moments that happened on SNL more, but well, actually, you know. Let's talk about. We'll go into this. The big punk moment, and because you're a big fan of a one Elvis Costello, do you want to talk about that one?
I was going to talk about that a little later, but
do you want to? Okay,
yes.
We don't rehearse.
We're still going in the sequential order, but we can talk about it now.
Oh, okay,
we can talk about it now.
All right. Are you ready? Or
I can
talk about.
I am always ready to talk about Mr. Elvis Costello. Elvis Costello is probably my all time favorite musician.
Okay,
I got into him late. Let's see. I got him into him in like late '80s when he had the single Veronica out with that he co-wrote with
Veronica.
Paul McCartney. Yes. Yeah. But this was in his original heyday in the late 70s. This was the...
Was it 77?
Yes. This was December 17th, 1977. This was a weird show to begin with because the host of the show was like this little old lady from Middle America because she won this contest of anyone can host.
What the fuck? What? Yeah. I never heard of that.
Yeah, she won this contest, and so she was the host. This person who is not a famous person was hosting the show.
They did that?
Yeah. It was the 70s, man. Like, lots of drugs going around.
I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah, I've never seen any of those bits from the show, so I have no idea what that was like.
Wow, all right. Wow.
Okay, so apparently they were originally wanted to book the Sex Pistols for this episode.
That's even... Wow.
Yeah, so it was going to be a little old lady and the Sex Pistols.
Oh, my God.
Malcolm McLaurin, their manager, he screwed up their visas, so they couldn't come overseas to perform on the show. SNL asked the Ramones to fill in, but the Ramones turned them down. They said the Ramones don't substitute for anybody. That is what Joey Ramone wrote in his autobiography
a few years later.
So it comes to Elvis Costello and the Attractions. And this is like when Elvis was like just starting to break in America.
Okay.
His
My Aim Is True. Did that come out?
I think his first album, My Aim Is True, had come out, and I believe that he was touring behind this year's model because this was after the Attractions got together.
Oh, okay, right.
He didn't get the Attractions together until between his first and second album.
Okay.
But they've been touring. They've become like a really solid rock band, good four-man rock band. The Attractions drummer, Pete Thomas, he wore a T-shirt that said, "Thanks, Malk." Because they wouldn't have had that opportunity if Malcolm McLaurin hadn't screwed up the Sex Pistols visas.
Wow, so, I didn't know that either.
So he's wearing a T-shirt that says, "Thanks, Malcolm." There's a little bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
So, Elvis Costello's radio, or his record company wanted him to play the song, Lesson Zero, thank you.
Okay.
And, which is a song, it was largely about British politics, and it was about a guy named Oswald Mosley, who was the leader of the British Union of Fascists.
Huh.
So it was largely about British politics, and Elvis didn't want to play this song because it was like, it's about British politics. Most Americans aren't going to know what the heck it's about.
I've heard that song numerous times. I never knew it was about that.
Yeah, he's written another version too. There was a version with rewritten lyrics called the Dallas version where he changed it to be about the Kennedy assassination. And then Mr. Oswald, and that is Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
So more relatable to the Americans. SNL and his record company both want him to play Lesson Zero. He starts out, he's playing Lesson Zero. He plays like three bars of Lesson Zero, stops abruptly, and then just says, "I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, there's no reason for me to play this song here." He turns around to the Attractions and just says, "Radio, Radio," and then they just launch into Radio, Radio, which is a song I think they were forbidden from playing because it's slamming the broadcast industry.
Right.
You know, it's basically about how trite and pre-programmed and bad terrestrial radio.
Yeah,
is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not wrong.
Yeah, yeah, and but, you know, and the song still relevant today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's a lyric in there: "The radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel." So you can see why a major broadcast network might frown on this song being played on their airwaves.
I know. Oof.
But it's such a great song.
Yeah.
You can't help but...
Yeah.
It's a toe tapper.
Yeah. Wait, so did the rest of the band know he was going to do this, or...?
I don't think so. He just did it in the moment. I have a little thing that Elvis Costello himself wrote about it in the liner notes of a re-release of this year's model. I'll read that in a minute.
Okay.
So he plays this song, and he's... And you know, they're tearing through it, and Elvis seems like very angry.
Yeah.
And the legend goes that Lorne Michaels was so pissed off at this, at this last minute switcheroo,
right.
Both because he's playing that song and because I'm sure it screwed up the time of the show. And you're doing a live show, it's pretty rigidly timed.
Yeah.
So supposedly Lorne Michaels was like standing right by the camera giving Elvis the finger throughout the song. And you can see at the end of the song, Elvis just like unplugs his guitar and just like struts off stage,
right?
And then the band, the attractions, they look confused for a minute, and then they just kind of walk off stage.
Like, thank you, good night.
Yeah, and this was their second number of the night, I believe.
Oh, so they could just walk right out. Oh.
Yeah, so they just walked right out. And Elvis was banned from the show for 12 years after this. He did not come back to the show until 1989.
Right.
And I remember this very distinctly because it was a show where Mary Tyler Moore was hosting.
Huh.
And in her monologue, she comes out, and Mary Tyler Moore is like America's sweetheart, so she had that very wholesome image.
Yeah.
And she was talking about a sketch they'd aired recently that took place at a nude beach.
Okay.
Do you remember this sketch? It was written by Conan O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all the male cast members, and they were like, hey, penis looks great
today.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's a good-looking penis there.
And then they go to Matthew Broderick, and they're, pretty small penis there, dude. And
yes.
The joke in the sketch is they're saying the word penis as many times as they possibly can. And this is like 1989.
And they sing the penis song.
They sing the penis song. Penis, 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 penis all day long. And then like Kevin Nealon turns to the camera and says, you know, when we were excited when NBC eliminated their broadcast standards and practices department, and then we could tackle these more mature subjects. And frankly, we're a little disappointed at all the laughter we heard on this tonight. And then they go back to the penis song. So Mary Tyler Moore is talking about the flap that this sketch received. And then at the end of her monologue, she says, we have a great show. Elvis Costello's penis is here with us tonight. So I always remember her saying that. And it was kind of weird when Elvis came back, because this is in his Mighty Like a Rose days when he's living in like Ireland. And he'd grown like very long hair and a very long beard to deal with the Irish winters.
Right, right.
So he looked very unlike the typical image of Elvis Costello.
He's like Jerry Garcia.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. As much like Jerry Garcia as Elvis Costello was able to look.
Jerry Garcia alive, not
yes.
Not now.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Because I'm pretty sure that Jerry Garcia was still alive in 1989.
Yeah.
It gets a little weirder, too, because Elvis comes back again. He comes back on the 25th anniversary show.
Yeah, with the Beastie Boys?
With the Beastie Boys.
Yes,
the Beastie
yes.
Boys are on. They start playing Sabotage, which is one of the all-time great Beastie Boys songs. And then Elvis Costello comes on stage, and he's like, wait, 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 wait. And he says, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, there's just no reason for us to play this song here tonight.
Yeah.
And then he plays Radio Radio with the Beastie Boys as his backing band.
That's insane!
Which is, I mean...
It's weird. It's like something like... That like you know earlier that was a huge no-no and like it got him banned. It was a big deal and a big problem.
Yeah,
but like as time goes on, it becomes like
two decades later.
Yeah, it's like we can make fun of this now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like and time heals old wounds.
I love that, and it's another great performance of the song.
Yeah,
and I did bring. I know Elvis wrote about this in his autobiography, but it was very tough to find. In his autobiography, because he didn't write it in like a sequential order, and he doesn't put an index in it, so it's very tough to find that.
Nice.
So I'm reading from the liner notes of the Rhino re-release of this year's Model, which is his second album that
all right,
Radio was originally on.
Buckle in, guys.
So here we go. let me find the right spot. Okay. We arrived at NBC with the intention of playing a couple of songs from our live set. Maybe something got lost in translation, but none of the humor seemed nearly as quote-unquote dangerous or funny as they seemed to think it was. Or perhaps they were just having a bad show.
Mm.
The record company interference certainly didn't help my mood. So, Elvis is PO'd to begin with.
All right.
We were getting pressure to perform... A number from My Aim Is True. I honestly believed that the words of Less Than Zero would be utterly obscure to American viewers. Taking a cue from an impromptu performance by Jimi Hendrix in a late 60s BBC television show, I stopped this tune after a few bars and counted off an unreleased song, Radio Radio. I believe that we were just acting in the spirit of the third word of the show's title, but it was quickly apparent that the producer did not agree.
Ooh.
He stood behind the camera, making obscene and threatening gestures in my direction. When the number was over, we were chased out of the building and told that we would never work again on American television.
Oh, good heavens.
Again, we did not make another... Indeed, we did not make another U.S. television appearance until 1980. Although this clip from SNL went on to be rerun on numerous occasions, I was not allowed back on the show until 1989. However, I was forgiven in time to be invited to recreate the moment with the Beastie Boys as my backing band for the show's 25th anniversary special. So that's what he had to say about
all right.
This was like around 2003, I think this album was re-released.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite SNL stories.
It's a great moment in time where it's just like, wow, you just see like somebody just make a split decision and
yeah,
history is made, even though at the time it's not.
And that's what you watch the show for, is those truly unexpected moments.
Yeah, very. There's one. There's one we gotta save for the end. We gotta talk about.
Okay,
we'll save that lit for. But save that for later. We call that teaser in the biz.
Yeah,
teaser.
That is one of my favorites, and I love like all the twists and turns it takes over the years.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it would be less interesting if he was just banned for life after that and he never came back. But he came back a couple times and did it. And I get a kick out of it.
It's pretty fantastic.
So,
all right. So here, I'll talk about this one. April 96, Rage Against the Machine.
Yes.
This was another one. This was a doozy. I'm not a huge Rage Against the Machine fan. I appreciate, you know, what they stand for, stuff like that. But I never got into the music like that. So anyway, they were scheduled to perform on SNL. With their host Steve Forbes.
Yeah.
Now, anybody remember Steve Forbes?
He ran for president. He was the big guy. Flat tax.
Flat tax.
He just
was
wanted
a big thing.
Flat percentage on taxes.
Right.
And that was his big platform.
Exactly. He's a billionaire. He wanted to do a flat tax. And at first, Rage, they wanted to do something to sort of stand in like just a sharp juxtaposition of who you know. Forbes
They're very
is.
Rebellious. They're
very
anarchists.
Much so.
They're
Yes,
yeah.
very much so. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to hang some upside-down flags over their amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, from what I read, like seconds before they were about to go on, somebody told some stagehands to go out there and take down the flags.
Right.
So stagehands went out and took out the flag. They were like pissed off, like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So they performed. They did their song. They did Bulls on Parade. And then, like, when they were done, they were asked to leave by officials because they were going to do some... You know, they wanted to do that rebellious shit. So what happened is, like, the bassist, I think he grabbed the flags, he, like, tore them into shreds, and he threw them into Steve Forbes' dressing room as they left. And I think that was their first performance. They never did a second one, too.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, maybe that's what I was thinking of before when you were talking about the replacements.
Oh, yeah. No, the replacement to the second one. But, yeah after Rage, you know, they were thwarted and asked to leave, they were just like, eh.
Yeah, I think the upside down American flag thing, I think that was like a regular thing they did in their shows.
Really?
I don't know if it was a specific protest against C. Forbes.
Oh, was
I think
it?
I think I read that was a regular thing they did.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I may be wrong on that, though.
All right. So, no,
but I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay. I didn't know that. Wow. Well, look at you.
Mm.
Look at you teaching me. It's weird. Like, whenever they show, like, artists do something, sort of protest something or make a statement, it's, I guess, depending on how they do it. Because, like, I remember in October 2017, Jay-Z, when he performed, he wore that Kaepernick jersey to sort of show support for Kaepernick, and that seemed to go over okay. Like, it makes me wonder, maybe it's the times, maybe, like, earlier you can do and say stuff back then. They could do and say stuff now that you couldn't do back then.
Probably.
Yeah, makes you think, right?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. All right, so let's wrap it. Let's do this one here. Remember a little-known artist called Ashley Simpson?
I have heard of her.
The infamous October 2004 performance?
I remember this very, very well because...
It was weird.
The weekend this aired, this was actually the weekend of my 10-year college reunion.
Hey!
And so I was in Evansville, Indiana. So I was watching this episode in a hotel room in Evansville, Indiana. And I remember Jude Law hosted.
Right.
And it was Ashley Simpson. This was like her second number of the night. And she had already played her big hit, which was Pieces of Me.
Right, right.
And then her second number started, and it was going to be some other song.
Autobiography.
Okay.
I have it written down. I don't know it off the top of my head, listeners.
Sure, okay.
I don't know.
He did look down at his notes.
I have notes.
I can confirm.
I'm not an Ashley Simpson fan.
He is wearing an Ashley Simpson t-shirt right now, but that is unrelated.
It's laundry day, and that's all I had.
Understood.
Okay.
Understood. No
all
judgment.
Right.
No
judgment.
No judgment. But she starts playing the song, and this is your thing.
The song starts playing, and you hear her vocals, but she is nowhere near the microphone.
She's like, I think she was holding a hand mic, and it was like down by her legs.
Right.
She was holding it by.
Yeah, exactly. It's clearly she's not singing, but you hear her voice.
Yeah.
And like she looked confused and the band looked confused.
Yeah.
And then she started doing like a little jig, like a little dance.
Yeah.
And then it just cut to commercial.
And then she walks off stage and her band just starts playing. Like they keep playing the riff from that song.
Yeah.
Just to kind of cover. But she just panicked and walked off stage.
I'd probably do the same thing.
And then she doesn't show up again until the good nights.
Yeah, and then Jude was like, hey, what happened there, Ashley?
He was just like, live television, what are you going to do? And she says, oh, I'm so sorry. My band started playing the wrong song, which they did not.
Yeah.
And she says, I didn't know what to do, so I thought I'd do a hoedown. And she's like trying to play it off, but...
She threw her band totally under the bus.
Totally under the bus. Her band was covering for her
Damn.
Pre-recorded ass.
No loyalty.
And...
No loyalty.
This was like pretty much the end of Ashley Simpson's music career.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, like, I think they asked her later on what happened. I think they said she was losing her voice due to acid reflux, so she wanted to lip sync.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she used acid reflux as an excuse.
Yeah, and I was saying, like,
which I resented because I have acid reflux. And I'm like, don't put this on the acid reflux people, Ashley Simpson.
Yeah, for those listeners who don't know, John usually uses a backup vocal.
You don't recognize my struggle.
Don't take my pain. Use it for yours. And apparently Lauren Michaels didn't know about it, but yeah, they wanted to do like she wanted to lip sync, and it did not go the way she was going to go.
And I heard, I did a little reading about this, and I heard that it happened, it might have been intentional because she was apparently so bitchy to the crew that they pissed her off, so they intentionally sabotaged that performance. Like they put her backing track and...
Why would you do that? Don't
it worked.
It did. I mean, yeah, but don't. Worked.
But
don't.
If that was intentional. Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
God, you know, don't piss off the people that are helping you.
Don't fuck with the crew, man.
That's like cursing out the waiter. They're going to spit in your food.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Exactly.
Just be nice.
I wonder if there was like any kind of investigation as to how that happened afterwards.
I'm sure it got all swept under the rug.
I wonder if like if anybody might have left like. Lost their job because of that or something.
Possibly. I don't know. Yeah. But oof.
I mean, I don't know if it was Ashley's people or if it was. You would think somebody from the show would have to be in on it to know that they were planning to use a.
Inside job, you think?
A vocal track.
This goes all the way to the top.
I don't know, man.
Wow.
It's just. Oh. I have no inside information. I'm just curious.
Wow.
Maybe but it's just.
If we get Mohawk Man in here, we'll ask him.
That's right. I bet he knows.
He has the answers.
Yeah.
He truly. He knows what's
Mohawk
going on.
Man knows all.
Mohawk Man knows what's up.
He probably knows, but I'm sure he couldn't talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Loose lips.
Yeah.
All right. So, I don't know. Do you want to end it up on the big one, the last one?
Well, there was one other
music
performance I wanted to mention. This was not a controversial one.
Okay.
This was actually my number two choice behind the Elvis Costello
number.
But I just wanted to mention it was when the Blues Brothers did Soul Man.
Oh, Blues Brothers. I was thinking about mentioning
beginning
them,
beginning of season four. It was November 18th, 1978. So this is early in the fourth season. And Garrett Morris introduces them. And it's the Blues Brothers band backing them.
Right.
It's the same guys from the movie, except Paul Schaefer's on the keyboards. And they come out and they do Sam Cooke's Soul Man.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's still, I think, one of the best performances I've seen on SNL.
That's true. They tore the roof off the place.
You know, it just starts out with them standing perfectly still, and then when the riff kicks in, they start dancing just from a dead stop. And and Belushi and Aykroyd, in their younger days, they had the moves.
Yeah.
They were good dancers, and Belushi has an incredible energy as a singer.
He does.
And it may be my favorite version of that song. I mean, that might be sacrilege, but...
No, that's...
But
it's how you feel.
That's great.
But yeah, it's when you were talking about, like, Belushi's energy, another instance of that is when he performed with Joe Cocker.
And
As Joe Cocker.
Yeah.
He did, like, a dead-on... That's got to be weird for Joe Cocker to see... Like,
yeah.
Oh, is that what I look like?
Yeah, well, like, Belushi did it, I think it was like a third episode. They didn't have a musical guest because I think they're still figuring out the show format. And so Belushi comes on and he does Joe Cocker. He did, I think...
A Little Help for My Friends?
I think it was A Little Help for My Friends.
What would you do if
which
I say
you may remember as like the theme song that was used on the Wonder Years
yes.
here of that generation. Yes. And then like a year or two later, Joe Cocker comes on the show and they do Feeling All Right.
Yeah, Feeling All Right.
And it's Joe Cocker comes out and he starts singing the song with his, and it's great because it's Joe Cocker.
Yeah.
And then like the second verse, Belushi comes out dressed identically.
Yeah.
In like the white suit with a t-shirt And he's doing his Joe Cocker with the sort of spastic arm movements.
And
it's great. I mean...
Yeah, his Joe Cocker was dead on. It was like so... It was eerily similar.
And Joe Cocker apparently wasn't offended by this. He was just like, oh, that's what I look like.
Yeah.
Other people were apparently offended on his behalf.
Oh.
But I found an interview with Joe Cocker where he's talking with Tom Snyder, and he's like, oh, no, it was fine. I mean, obviously, he wouldn't do it with Belushi if he was... If he took any genuine offense to it,
but. I'm offended for you, Cocker.
Yeah.
You stand down, Cocker. I'll take this.
There were a lot of Joe Cocker people backing him up.
The Cockerheads or the Cockles. I don't know what to call them. it's always weird when you see somebody doing it. Like I was thinking about like another person that does a really good impression of. You ever see when Jimmy Fallon does his Neil Young impression?
I think I remember that.
It is so like.
I remember his Mick Jagger impression better, actually. But
that's good. I mean, he's done it recently on the Tonight Show now.
Okay,
and it is eerily like he is Neil Young when he does that. Like, he'll do the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song as Neil Young.
Oh, that's
but it's
funny.
They change it so it sounds like more like a Neil Young song, but it's really good. They also had one where they had he did a Neil Young song. I forget what it was. It might have been like Iggy Azalea Fancy or something.
Uh-huh.
But like as he was doing it, then Crosby, Stills, and Nash came out behind them.
Oh,
and
funny.
Then all four of them were singing it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, and then there was another one where the actual Neil Young came and sang next to him as Neil Young.
Wow, I had no idea about that.
Look him up. His Neil Young is like crazy spot on. Him, and he does a really good Bruce Springsteen too. So,
all right.
Trying to help out Jimmy Fallon.
Give him a tip of the hat to Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, you know, he needs our help.
So that's everything, right? That's every single controversial SNL musical moment.
I can't.
All of our favorites. There's literally nothing else to talk
about,
right?
Well,
right.
There is this one thing.
Uh-huh.
You ever hear of this artist, Sinead O'Connor?
Cue ball in the side pocket.
Oh, geez, there it is. Uncle Fester. Sinbad O'Connor.
Yes, yes, got, yes.
All right, for those that don't know, I mean, this...
should I?
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you.
You know, and that's in support of whichever viewpoint you have on this, so I'm not going to get into it.
Yeah, this was... I mean, you talk about punk rock.
This was like 1992, right?
October 92. This might be the most punk rock thing I've ever seen.
Probably, yeah.
But Sinead O'Connor, this is what at the height of her fame. This is, you know, Nothing Compares to You, the Prince song she sang, and she was everywhere. She wanted to perform this a cappella version of War, Bob Marley's song War. Mm-hmm. And during rehearsal, she held up a picture of a Balkan child to sort of protest child abuse during wartime, and that's what was in the rehearsal.
Right.
During the live taping,
switcheroo.
She switched it up, and so she changed up some of the words in the song from "fight racial injustice" to "fight child abuse," and she held up a picture of the Pope,
Pope John Paul II,
and
the current Pope of the time.
Yes, the current Pope at the time. Yes, yeah, that's right. She held up a picture of the Pope, ripped it up, and said, "Fight the real enemy." Now, no one in NBC knew she was going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The director, Dave Wilson, made a decision to purposefully not turn on the applause sign.
So it's just dead silence.
Dead silence.
It was eerie.
It was. I've never seen a performance where there was just nothing afterwards.
Yeah.
The host of that show was Tim Robbins, and I believe he was raised Catholic.
Mm.
Didn't mention her at the end of the show at all.
Didn't thank her during the good night.
Didn't acknowledge her.
And she didn't come out on stage again, did she?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Wow.
But, and
wow.
This, I mean, like, this pretty much ended her career.
From what I understand, she was doing this in protest of, this is when, like, the stories about child abuse in the Catholic Church were really starting to break.
Right.
Or maybe even before they broke.
Right.
So I think a lot of people just didn't know what that was about.
Yeah, no.
And they were confused. They thought it was like a bit. I mean, I guess it was an anti-religion statement, but it was more.
It was more about like child abuse in the Catholic Church,
right?
That's the bulk of what she was protesting.
You know, it's a story that's still around today.
She was telling. She was. That's the real thing about it. It's like she was right.
Not wrong.
She was right. She had a point. She was like saying, "Hey, the Catholic Church is doing some pretty fucked up things here. You should look into this."
Yeah,
and like the whole world was like, "No." You're a terrible person. Like we all turned her back on her. She made her into like a pariah.
Well, I mean, because I think I understand what she was trying to do, but I think she probably went about it the wrong way because I think her statement it's kind of obscure. It's very provocative and controversial to tear up a picture of the Pope, but unless you make it clear why you were tearing up a picture of the Pope,
yeah.
It's and I read a little about this in the Live from New York book, the oral history of SNL, and I think Al Franken was saying, like, you know, she used to be like in the church. She was like a clergy person or some. She had some. Well, I don't think women could be ordained in the Catholic Church yet, but she had some sort of position, and so this was like a very huge thing for her.
It was
to
very
do.
Meaningful for her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And like I understand, like the NBC switchboard was flooded. And
yeah,
they got tons
of calls, tons of letters,
and I think they had to issue some sort of apology the next
week
or the next day or
there
something
was
like that.
Apologies had to be issued, and I think they made sketches afterwards. I remember there being a sketch with Jan Hooks with Sinead O'Connor.
That was in the Sinatra Group parody.
Was it? Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, no, they did the Sinead O'Connor Good Time.
Yeah,
hour or
good
something.
Time Irish hour.
Which, yeah, and it was like the St. Patrick's Day show, wasn't
it? Yeah, yes, very much so. Oh, we're recording on St. Patrick's Day. Hey.
We are.
Hey. I don't know why I went to an Irish brogue right there. But that performance was like is legendary, and it pretty much ended her career. Like after that, no one wanted anything to do with her. She was persona non grata.
She was a pariah.
Yeah, very much so. That. I mean, I feel like if she did something like this now, maybe it wouldn't be as big a deal. Because, I mean, Pete Davidson on the last show, he was talking. He said what he said about the Catholic Church. And, like, he's gotten some heat, but not nearly the heat.
I think there's so much more out about it now.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
It's kind of undeniable that shit happened.
I think, like, the Catholic Church, like the stranglehold it has
but
over
back then,
their world is kind of
I remember
loosening.
Watching that. I was watching SNL. I was in the middle of college at this point because this was, like, fall of 92.
Right.
And I was watching with my roommate, Scott. Hi, Scott. listens to the show.
Hi, Scott.
Said a nice thing about us on the iTunes last week.
Thank you, Scott.
But we were watching, and I will confess, like, after her first number, we muted her for the second number.
Yeah.
Because we were just like, oh, you know, neither one of us are really into Sinead O'Connor. So we're like, we don't need to hear this. And then we see on the set, she just holds up a picture of the Pope, and we just see her tearing it up. And we were
like, what?
What the fuck's that about? I think we unmuted it so we could hear what she said. And we were like, so we were really confused.
Yeah.
We were like, what the hell was that? What? Huh?
She got a problem with the Pope?
He's
a good guy.
Yeah, we missed, you know, what little setup it had.
Yeah, I think, I think that's it. I think, like, because what she was saying was just so far ahead of what anybody else knew about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the timing, but I still think about it. That's like, wow, that is like the most, just ballsiest move I've ever seen anybody do on live television.
Yeah, that's up there, man.
It was bonkers.
That's up there.
Yeesh. All right,
how uncomfortable must it have been backstage after
been
that?
Like, and you got to do a sketch after that?
Yeah, I know.
Who went on after that?
That's what I want. It was probably,
well
it was her
Franz
second number. It was probably like, you know, some 10-1 thing.
Yeah.
But I'd be like Homer Simpson in that old Simpsons. Are you ready to laugh?
my God.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, woof. All right, then I think we're speechless. I don't even.
It's a weird note to end it on, but I mean, yeah.
We could end it on some. I wrote some other stuff. Like,
okay, let's.
Lana
let's
Del Rey's performance. Remember that?
I heard about that. I don't remember this. Apparently, it was very disastrous, and
I mean,
she was very wooden.
Yeah, she was like very wooden and very kind of swayed back. This happened in January of 2012, and it was very like she had like very still, uninspired performance. But you know, people see that. And
this was like her first national TV appearance,
yeah.
I think.
And so. People like start tweeting like, worst performance ever. Mm-hmm. But I look back on it, I was like, it wasn't that bad. But
yeah.
I remember there was a big blowout about it. And I don't know what else did I write? Queen's performance when they did Under Pressure and Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
I watched that one
one.
That was something that was under consideration for my list.
Do you remember when Kesha was on back in 2010? And She did TikTok. As another,
I heard about this. Yeah,
that was another performance. A lot of people were saying was like terrible because she was like wearing a spacesuit and like her backup dancers had like spacesuits with like helmets on them.
Sure.
And at one point she was like kind of playing with lasers.
As you
and,
do.
And she says, "Did anyone ever stop to think that maybe we're the aliens?"
No, I do not well, stop to think that.
Okay. All right. Well,
I am almost certain I am not an alien.
Well, she did.
Okay.
Oh, and we'll end it on this.
She's just deeper than me, I guess.
She's just too real for you, man. You just can't handle it. And there was also we got in through Twitter from Dennis C. Wilson 1 telling us about the Faith No More performance. You remember that when Faith No More 1990, they performed Epic?
Yeah.
And at the end, like, the lead singer kind of climbed up on top of the amps and kind of jumped behind the curtain or like behind the background scenery. It was kind of like dancing and stuff.
Okay.
That was weird. And we ended on a shrug.
Yeah, I mean, I did not rewatch that for this in preparation for this episode, so and I don't particularly remember it.
Well,
so.
I did.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's our music show, guys. There's a lot of good musical performances on
there
it.
There is, and I'm sure there's, like, a ton that we're forgetting about, because, I mean, there's just been so many people. I mean, we're talking about 44 years.
Yeah.
Of music performances, and, you know, your musical taste is such a
individual
thing,
I'm
too.
I'm sure there's, like, a Captain Beefheart or something we're forgetting, but whatever.
Yeah.
We'll do another musical performance, and then we'll put those
we probably
in there.
Will. Yeah. But, you know, every last one of them was better than Greta Van Fleet.
Wow! You really?
I will just say that. I'm just throwing that out there.
Every single one of them.
Let's bring back Ashley Simpson every damn week, man.
Better than...
Yes, I would take Ashley Simpson doing the little jig, and
if you find a way to bash Greta Van Fleet on every episode we do from now on, I'd be very happy.
I'll see what I can do.
Hot dog. All right, so yeah, anything to plug, anything to promote? What do you got there?
Oh, gosh, I can't think of anything right now. You know, just follow me on the Twitter at Trumbull Comic.
Yeah, and follow me on the Twitters and the Instagram, Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Oh, you had a little jingle. I like that.
Well, it's a musical episode.
That's
so
right.
I have to throw them a little...
And you can also follow the show Twitter at SNL Nerds Show.
Yeah.
You can also go to non-productive.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon if you want to support the show, if you want more of this incoherent babbling that we do here.
If you want more ramblings from middle-aged men, then donate to the Patreon. Why don't you?
If you support me bashing Greta Van Fleet as much as possible.
We will
contribute to that.
We will double up on that depending on how much money we get.
That's true.
We will turn this whole podcast into an anti Greta Van Fleet if need be. If the price is right.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And that's our show.
And you know, please go review us on iTunes or the other
reviews. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you can, you know, just mail us. Send us a letter.
Yeah,
put a message in a bottle.
Smoke signals.
Carrier pigeons.
We're just very emotionally needy people. We need compliments wherever we can get them.
Yes, telegraph, horseback, wherever. Just let us know.
Yep, Pony Express.
Pony Express. Yes. Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
all the modern day ways to send letters.
But But that's our show for this week. So
yeah.
We're going to be back next week. Should we talk about what our theme is for next week?
Why not? Well, the people deserve it.
So this week was our favorite musical performances and other controversial musical performances. Next week, we're going to do a topic that's near and dear to our heart. This was another idea of Darren's.
Yeah.
We are going to do comedians who have hosted Saturday Night Live.
Let's do it.
So we're going to talk all about that.
Yes, the funny folks.
And so I look forward to seeing what we come up with for that. So,
oh, it's going to be a doozy.
That's right. So... That's it for this week.
That's it.
So, thanks for listening.
Later, guys.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.